There's a lot of unexplainability when it comes to this. We call it a black box, right? And so it makes it very challenging to understand what was the decision-making process it came to get to that conclusion, and then what are the factors that were influenced to give you those outputs.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is Generative AI, exploring the possibilities of ChatGPT, DALL-E, and Midjourney in healthcare. Although we've had generative AI since 2014, when generative adversarial networks were introduced, the massive publicity around ChatGPT has really captured the public's imagination. General artificial intelligence describes algorithms, such as ChatGPT, that can be used to create new content, audio, code, images, text, simulations, and video. But what are the possibilities for these in healthcare and pharma? My guest today is Frank Mendoza, who's a highly respected and award-winning analytics leader with over 20 years' experience in strategy and data science. He is the founder of Catalytics, a service company that helps Fortune 500 companies like Nike, Kellogg's, Dr. Pepper, Jim Beam, and others use data and AI to solve their toughest business challenges. Welcome, Frank. Great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Dr. Bates. It's been fantastic being here. I really think it's an honor to be a part of your podcast.
Oh, thank you. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and how you ended up in this space?
Yeah, so in 2015, I started Catalytics. It really centered on my passion around solving problems using data. I've always gravitated towards leveraging information and data to solve hard problems. In early 2000, I was certified as a Six Sigma Black Belt. And so that leveraged ability to use statistics and use large information to do continuous improvement projects in the manufacturing space. Mm-hmm. And so over that time, I recognized the culmination of computational power that's happening in the cloud, the storage capabilities that were being created with Google Cloud and Microsoft Azure's platform. And then the algorithms have started to really mature in that space. And so I really thought it was a great time to introduce these types of advanced analytics and statistical methods into organizations. And so, like you mentioned, I've had the great pleasure of partnering with some amazing brands over that time frame. Everything from developing small MVPs where we leverage some of the machine learning to actually helping them establish their data strategy and figuring out what should be the use cases that they prioritize that are going to be aligned to their business objectives and goals.
Yeah, fantastic. Let's start with the most famous generative AI, ChatGPT. Or what I call GPT 3.5, because we had GPT 3 and now we've got GPT 4. So some people are reacting with fear that it's going to be taking over a lot of things. And I know that academics are very concerned about cheating, although we do have two apps that can detect that. Yep. But others are welcoming this change and looking at how they can bring it into their companies. But obviously, with all of these tech, there's the potential to change how jobs are performed. What do you think are the biggest opportunities for organizations for using ChatGPT?
Yeah, so I like
and,
to...
And large language models. Maybe I shouldn't just say ChatGPT, but...
Exactly, yeah.
They're
large
ilk.
Language models.
Exactly,
in
yeah.
general, yeah. I think right now, as organizations are being introduced to this, and of course, like you mentioned, this is not new. These large language models, these deep learning models have been around for a while. But I think what happened is the barrier to entry to leveraging some of these tools significantly changed with the introduction last November with ChatGPT, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be where you had to establish a lot of foundational data and information in order to take advantage of this. And then you needed data scientists to help build out these algorithms as well to take advantage of that. ChatGPT just opened up the floodgates in terms of easiest signing up for any other thing you sign up for on the internet. Sign up, give your email, and then for free, bam, you have access to a very powerful, powerful large language model.
Yeah.
I think right now organizations are really on the precipice of understanding what use cases are going to be available and how they could take advantage of this. Right now, I would say a lot of organizations are looking at it from a productivity perspective.
Yeah.
What's the productivity benefit as a result of using some of these tools? And I like to say we're in the age of iteration right now.
Mm-hmm.
So these tools allow us to do a lot of iteration on a certain subject or idea. I always, promote ChatGPT is a great tool from a brainstorming perspective. If you're looking for titles for a podcast, or if you're looking for information around a certain subject, these are really great tools to kind of ask that. I always caveat that with saying, though, there still needs a level of due diligence, right? There's a concept called hallucination, where these large language models have the ability to make up things.
Yeah.
And so you have to be devil's advocate when you get information from a large language model like ChatGPT.
And of course, because ChatGPT was only trained on data up to 2021, anything post that it's going to just hallucinate and make something up. That sounds great, but it's not necessarily true.
It is, and they're doing better, right? So if you look at Google Bard, for example, another large language model, they're actually access to the internet. ChatGPT just released some plugins that actually allow it to go browse the internet as well. So they're going to get better and better. And then Bing, of course, is tied to the internet, which its underlying large language model is OpenAI's GPT as well.
Yeah.
So they're going to be better and better in terms of accessing the internet. But nonetheless, I still caveat everybody, still have some due diligence, do the checks and balances with the information that's been given. Don't trust the statistic or information just because it's been provided.
Yes, I've seen some big doozies that they've made. And then the other, of course, issue that we have for pharma is that with ChatGPT, not with large language models, is that anything you put in goes into the OpenAI database. So
that's
compliance.
Great. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We can talk a little bit about the risks associated, but that is a big risk right now.
Yeah.
Because it is not private, right? And so it's open to retraining. So OpenAI
absolutely.
Has even said that if anything you place in there, we're going to use to retrain other models.
Yes.
And there's already been incidents where Samsung recently, Coder has entered trade secrets and private code into OpenAI to check for errors. And lo and behold, now they have the opportunity to train that model against that information. So you have to be cognizant of it. There are going to be solutions. They're going to allow you to do, for lack of a better word, a customized ChatGPT that's based on your private information. And they're going to be opportunities for you, because that's where the value, I think, for an organization is going to be with leveraging this, which is I want to train on my information, on my literature, on my patents, et cetera, and be able to really allow my resources and talent to take advantage of that in a very easy and natural language perspective.
Yeah. There was a very good post on LinkedIn recently. I should repost it. I can't remember if it was from Pascal or Steve, but one of the big AI guys.
Mm-hmm.
And he listed all the different really top level open source large language models that were GPT-4 level, that any big organization could then leverage those and put them in their secure environment, which takes away that risk. But
And the cost associated with training is just dropping exponentially because of these, because you don't need, like 3.5, I think is 175, billion web pages to train.
Yeah.
You don't need that level of, and you can do it with, what I would consider very modest GPU and compute power. So it's very amazing the type of, how quickly we're getting to that usability.
That's the thing, isn't it? AI is just advancing logarithmically now. It's incredible.
It's incredible. There's always been a hype cycle, right? There's always been this hype cycle around AI. But like I mentioned, the investment that you would need to typically have done to lay the foundation, get your data quality to where it needed to be, ensure that you had the resources and talent to go do it, were typically only enterprise level.
Yeah.
And what we're finding now is, once that tipping point with the introduction of ChatGPT, I really believe this is a instance in our lifetime where it is really leveling the playing field, and it's going to even get that much easier for smaller and organizations to really be able compete with others.
Absolutely. I mean, there's so many great platforms out there now that do so much that you, for so little that you couldn't have even dreamed of. Let's turn to pharmaceutical companies because they're the audience. Where Sure. do you see the biggest opportunities with generative AI for them?
Yeah, so I think probably the first opportunity that I see is what typically happens with most organizations. It's a chat function, right? So opening up the capabilities to engage customers better, offer better support. So, you know, this is a capability of having a 24/7 resource at your disposal to answer questions with regards to, you know, symptoms that I might have on a certain medication or, you know, adverse effects or just inquiries in general that customers might have. You have now a capability to have someone who's knowledgeable, who has insights to the information that can communicate with them via your website, via another portal, via mobile apps and things like that. So I think that's probably what I would consider some low-hanging fruit from that perspective. But I think the exciting stuff happens when you start engaging into maybe personalized medication or drug discovery. I think those the ability of these technologies to really analyze vast amounts of scientific literature and patents and clinical data, trial data, that has the ability to kind of analyze that information, just to be able to see what the potential candidates might be for new drugs. And then when you talk about personalized care, you know, again, vast amounts of data. So you can look at things around a person's medical history, previous dosage options, treatments that they've had, et cetera, and start to figure out, you know, is this the right dosage that we should be giving people based on their specific needs and stuff like that.
Yeah.
There's some amazing opportunities. I think it's, again, right now in the very early stages where it's in its infancy at this stage. So I really am excited to hear about some things that people are taking advantage of around this.
Yeah, well, clinical trials is another area with data management, patient engagement, automated reporting. But you just mentioned adverse events or adverse, you know, events from drugs. Another area that it's great for is pharmacovigilance and drug safety monitoring, adverse event monitoring, and even reviewing case reports, you know, to find ADRs. It's quite useful. Another area that we've used it is, well, large language models, not ChatGPT, is global value dossiers, you know, automatically compiling those. And then there's also, you know, in drug discovery, something that we've done for a while is actually using generative AI to create more patient data in rare disease or rare cancers because you don't have enough patients. So we need to find ways to create data. I kind of think that's actually the future for pharma with generative AI as well, because we have so many issues with compliance and privacy. You know, we're not allowed. So if you're generating data that's not real, but it's real, but it's not real people, it's kind of solves one of our big headaches with data. It's quite a cool thing.
Yeah, and I think that the challenge I think is the speed at which people are using this information, but yet the I'll call it slowness, but again, we're only like 6 months in, right? But you have to recognize that people are going to be leveraging these technologies, and like we mentioned before, there is a lot of hallucination with ChatGPT and other tools.
Yeah,
and so it's almost incumbent upon organizations, pharmaceutical companies, to recognize that. There's going to be misinformation out there.
Yes, yeah.
And so how do you jump in front of that and provide, you know, provide venues for people to really get accurate information around this as quickly as possible? Because there could be some adverse effects as a result of people believing things that they shouldn't.
Yes, and that could lead to all sorts of legal issues as well. So,
correct.
Which leads us into the risks. So what would you see as the biggest risks with companies when they're implementing ChatGPT?
Large language models. They really are necessary to be trained on the right information. So when, you know, all these models have been trained, in order for them to be effective, they need to be trained on good data. There's always a mantra, garbage in, garbage out, right? And so the quality of the data is going to be paramount in terms of how much value they're going to bring.
Yes.
The challenge with data, though, unfortunately, is there's so much of it at times that it's not clean And in other instances, it's biased,
yeah.
right? And so it's either incomplete, it's unrepresentative of a sample that you're really looking for, or just it contains inherent biases that you don't want in something like a pharmaceutical clinical test, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's really important, and this goes for all AI, but certainly when it's life threatening and altering, you really need to ensure that the quality of the data that you're feeding into it is accurate. It's been tested. It just has a high quality associated with it, so that you can train these models and reduce the risk associated with bias and that is sometimes likely.
Yeah. And, bias is common. So you've got to be very careful with it. There's so many great cases that illustrate that, with the Amazon and even the British Army, there's some interesting things that were done where they didn't take account the bias in the data and got, disturbing results. What other sorts of things do you think would be risks?
Yeah, the other piece around these large language models, again, we talked about this, it's based on deep learning, which is neural networks.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of unexplainability when it comes to this. We call it a black box, right? And so it makes it very challenging to understand what was the decision-making process it came to get to that conclusion. And then what are the factors that were influenced to give you those outputs, right? And so it's very difficult, and it could raise concerns in terms of kind of, especially highly regulated industries like pharmaceuticals, where you have to explain why you came to a certain decision.
Yeah,
it's also important in financial markets and things like that. But, you can imagine, because it is black box, because it has to do with weighting and biases and certainly the number of nodes and layers that you put in the neural network, all that leads to a lack of transparency. And so it's incumbent upon, pharmaceutical and other users of these large language models to recognize that that's going to be a risk associated with it and ensure that you're using the right use cases to take
it. Yeah. And then, of course, the other one we touched on briefly was legal, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Legal, from a legal standpoint, these generative AIs have been trained, again, at least these open ones have been trained on, the web. So there's a lot of questions around ownership and IP.
Yeah.
Who owns these, outputs at the end of the day, and how much attribution should you give to the original creators of the data that was trained against? That's another reason why it's very paramount for people who have, proprietary trade secrets, information like that, to not just leverage OpenAI and open APIs, that they really need to create solutions that are unique to their environment, that is secured and walled off, if you will, from the open public.
Yeah, absolutely. So what would be the biggest ways to mitigate the risks overall?
Yeah, at the end of the day, it really boils down to just establishing some responsible AI practices.
Yeah.
So really understanding, how are you collecting data? How are you selecting the right data? Pre-processing to minimize as much bias as you can. What are you doing around validation of that data? What are your testing procedures around that data? And then, once you've established a model or establishing, large language models that you're using, how do you monitor that for performance to ensure that it's always giving you the right information, or it's giving you as much accurate information as possible? And then at the end of the day, we talked about the transparency and the explainability. So you want to ensure that you're using the right use cases and doing everything you can to, when possible, to demonstrate transparency in terms of decision making.
Yeah, absolutely. And what about other types of generative AI that we're seeing, like DALL-E and others?
Yeah, it's an exciting time because I think, ChatGPT is certainly getting all the the large language models, I should say, are getting all the publicity. But there are some amazing things being done in image space. There's being done in the sound.
Yeah.
You might have heard of things like being able to mimic someone's voice with just like 2 minutes of their audio, right?
Well, that's the scam that's been going on since last year, remember?
Yeah, exactly. So, there are other ways that those technologies, was just on a panel yesterday with the American Marketing Association, and we were talking about, these generative AIs outside of just ChatGPT, image generators, right? So, how do you use those to create new ad campaigns or create new marketing material for your brand, to really drive new and novel ways of approaching and reaching your target audience.
I have to say, the one I really, really am waiting for is Runways Gen 2. I've seen, you know, Gen 1's great, but when I've seen the demo for Gen 2, and that just blows me away.
It really is amazing. It's like we talked about earlier, the AI is moving so quickly, right?
Yeah.
It's hard for anyone to keep in touch with all the advancements that are going on right now. And so, like you mentioned, there's amazing content that's created. The video output is just phenomenal. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if a full feature movie comes out in the next year, leveraging just generative AI and technology like that. So it's impressive. And I think, you know, leveraging those technologies to create maybe new music that you know, from a medication or a harmonization perspective for someone would be amazing, right, to look into.
Well, actually, I've got 2 points that you've made me think about. One on music is I did a episode of the podcast with a company called GetSound.ai, and they use AI to generate background music to help you do whatever you're doing. So, for example, it looks at where you are and from your location, and then it looks at the weather, the date, the time, the everything. And so I tried it. I did a trial of it. And I'm not the sort of person that likes noise in the background when I'm working. I'm just kind of like very silent. But it generated this music, which I didn't really notice, which is unusual for me. I really find music a bit irritating if I'm working. And then I was really focused, and I suddenly thought, oh, wait a minute, is that still on? And it was. I listened and stopped. So it helped me really focus, which I was amazed at. And then someone used it for their ADHD child, and, you know, they have a real issue with focus. And they did the GetSound.ai AI-generated music with a child who couldn't focus, and their focus increased dramatically.
That's phenomenal.
It was really impressive. I kept thinking that they, even though they're an AI music company, they should do a clinical trial on ADHD children, because I just thought, my God, the application there is so cool.
I think that's where the exciting part is with regards to AI. Sure, there's a lot of productivity gains that people are going to have, but the personalization that you're going to be able to do for individuals based on their unique, challenges and obstacles and things like that are going to be astronomical, because you're going to be able to really tailor solutions for those people. And I think that's where I'm really optimistic about the value that it's going to bring.
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing that you made me think about is you mentioned movies, and there's 2 points there. One, I don't know if you saw earlier this week the Hollywood screenwriters strike, because they're not very happy about the AI writing things. They're probably right. It will probably take over a lot of writing for sure. But then I had also interviewed a very interesting company last year called Charisma AI, and they actually have AI that personalizes movies by the person watching. So how you interact with the movie changes the story. And I don't know how many options they have for changing the story, but it's AI, so probably millions. But
yeah, I think that's going to actually result, Dr. Bates, into more of a challenge with the bubble effect that we're seeing in our society, right? Because there is, we talked about the personalization and the value of it and the upside of it, but there also is a shared experience that we're going to actually get away from, because there is going to be a personalized movie for you versus a personalized movie for me, right?
That's true.
We're not going to go all watch the same movie and have, you know,
the same experience. Yeah.
Exactly. Water cooler conversation around it, because it was tailored. So we have to, I think, recognize the value of community and really understand kind of how personalization will start to play into that, and recognize that there is going to be some effects of that bubble that, you know, you're going to be in your own bubble, and you're going to be, you know, got to be careful with that confirmation bias that we're all sometimes not familiar with.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what lessons can we extrapolate from your experiences in other sectors to the pharmaceutical industry?
Yeah, right now it's what I like to call the shiny object syndrome.
Everybody, oh, yes, I call it that too.
Yep. And there's a lot of management by magazine, right, is what I call it as well, where I've read so-and-so is doing it. I've read, you know, my competitor is doing it. So we need to do it too. And pharmaceutical companies, like any other company, need to understand that implementing these technologies sometimes require a large investment. They require, you know, resources and unfortunately time as well to really implement these and do these correctly. Yeah. And so you really need to understand, like we talked about, what's your overall business objective and goals? Mm. And then how do you develop a comprehensive AI strategy that's going to be tied to that to be able to demonstrate value around your objectives? And so it really is, I caveat, you know, a lot of people, it's amazing technology, great technology. It's going to help a lot of organizations, but really identifying and prioritizing the right use cases is going to allow you to get to that value value added state a lot quicker.
You're preaching to the choir here because that's what we do. A lot of those, I call them strategic AI blueprints. And, you know, unless you look at what your objectives are overall as a company and the business unit, and then you find where the unmet needs are and where you can actually accelerate revenue generation, efficiency, that's right, all the different things. And then you have to do that analysis around criteria around, you know, what's the impact of this likely to be? Is it going to, what's the strategic fit with this initiative? That's what's the cost benefit?
I love walking with organizations through their customer journey and identifying opportunities, but to your point, recognizing where it's a best fit and where it's not a best fit. And then to your point, also generating a business case and an ROI so we can justify the investment and the time that's going to be necessary. Absolutely. But then there's clear lineage right back to their business objective and how they create a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
Too often we're running into situations where people are putting a plan together, right? We're going to go implement this huge repository. We're going to go, do X, Y, and Z, but there's not a clear lineage to how it's going to create a competitive advantage for their organization. And in my eyes, that's not a strategy. That's just a plan.
100% agree. And I think the other thing that a lot of companies don't do when they're doing a strategy is actually look at the whole ecosystem. So they may look at their direct competitors, but actually the way the world's moving now, you know, Amazon's making cancer vaccines, Google's making drugs, we've got DTX, we've got nanobots, quantum dots, there's all this stuff going on that are going to impact the pharmaceutical. I've just written a big paper on this, but they're going to impact the pharmaceutical industry. Yes. And so when they're doing a strategic plan, they need to look at the ecosystem, their USPs, their customer needs, and then the tech enablers, which may be AI, blockchain, whatever it is.
It goes back to the Simon Sinek kind of, you know, start with why, right?
He's like,
start with why, and then you can figure out the how about it. You know, there's a lot of technology, but there are going to be a lot of disruptive companies out there that are entering markets that they wouldn't have otherwise historically entered. And it's going to be important for people to protect their moats, right? So understanding what their competitive advantage really is, what their, you know, value proposition is, and then ensuring that they're building, they're using technologies to augment that, as opposed to trying to say we're just using technology for the sake of using technology.
Yeah, and I think that pharma have a habit of saying, well, we're making so much money, we're fine, we're okay. Mm-hmm. But then when you look at the companies that have been disrupted, they all thought that, you know, Barnes and Noble, Blockbuster, you know, Kodak, all of these. Yeah. And of course, Blockbuster had that, you know, they rejected the offer to buy Netflix, which was, I know there are other issues, but so it's very interesting. And I think that unless any company, and particularly pharma, because that's my industry, really look at this carefully, they could be disrupted and not even see it coming from somewhere that they haven't even looked at.
Correct. Yeah. And there's, like you said, countless examples of people who, for lack of a better word, you know, rest on their laurels, right? And at the end of the day, there are too many players who, like I said earlier in the conversation, this is really leveling the playing field, right? And smaller players who would not have ever been considered competitors, are going to really be disruptors in this environment because they're not necessarily held to what I call the inertia of an organization, right? Maintaining the status quo.
It's true. There's a very interesting company I came across a few years ago, and they were researching aging drugs, and they were a startup. a startup with $1 billion in funding, but a startup. But so they were researching anti-aging drugs, and they came up with Wnt pathways, which actually cover a lot of different areas in the biological system. And they created a drug that actually they tested on terminal cancer patients of different types of cancer, and they all went into remission, all the patients who were actually on death's door. And they did it with terminal Alzheimer's, and the Alzheimer patient regressed and actually got their memory back. And so the FDA actually did a fast track approval for one of those, but that's one drug for all these areas. And that makes me realize that, you know, someone like them could disrupt pharma. Say you take one pill that cures everything.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It's incredible. So yeah, there's a lot of really interesting things going on. So what about, what do you think pharma needs to change the most, not only to survive, but survive and thrive?
Yeah, I always, you know, we talked about some of the risks and challenges and maybe some ways to mitigate those risks and challenges, but you really need to create this environment of experimentation.
Yeah. Right?
That environment that allows people to go and explore these technologies allows them. And, you know, in my experience, the AI, data science, the machine learning, all these technologies, they're not deterministic. They're more probabilistic, right? Mm-hmm. So there always is a possibility of it being wrong. And there's always a possibility of a pilot or MVP not working the way you anticipated it would.
Yeah.
And so, but, you know, experimentation is going to be vital to success. I think it's important, though, to put guardrails and boundaries of where it should be used and where it shouldn't be used.
Yeah.
And educate people. And like we talked about before, I think if you want to thrive in this environment, you better have a use case that's tied directly to your goals and your objectives.
Absolutely.
And so having a comprehensive strategy, having someone who understands these technologies and understands how the best use cases can support those objectives and goals to ensure that you know, either generate more revenue, get better customer loyalty, minimize costs associated with implementation, operations, things like that. Understanding kind of the best ways to leverage these technologies is going to be key.
Yeah.
Across the board.
Well, such a good conversation. Really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your time today. Anyone who would like to reach out to Frank, you can contact him at frank@catalytics.ai or get him on LinkedIn. Thank you again. Really enjoyed it. And maybe we will do another one where we explore it further.
Thank you so much for having me. I really do appreciate it. Hopefully this offered some value to the to your audience as well.
Yeah,
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. You're very welcome.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.